these younger people, we felt, had to serve some sort of an apprenticeship, and they were put on various committees, and then eventually came on the board. I think as the 70s went along, many of us who might have been, I hate to word you, use the word older, but we went on to Federation and other community activities, American Jewish Committee and a lot of other committees. And younger groups took over, and that's as it should be. But there weren't enough gray beards left behind, so to speak, to keep the place from getting to going ahead without sufficient responsibility. That's one of the criticisms that I would make of our leadership in terms of not foreseeing this. We were so anxious to see younger people become active in it that it was loaded too much in terms of individuals who were interested maybe unfair, but the younger people were more interested in the athletic part, whereas we, who came from a different generation, were much more interested in Jewish cultural activities. That may not be fair. That may be my interpretation of things. I'm not too sure of that. So, but there was some of that. I know. You know, when they built three more, not tennis courts. Well, they wanted tennis courts. That was the big gripe all the time. There weren't tennis courts. If only we had tennis courts. But they did go in for racquetball and things of that sort. And that had a relatively high priority as compared to meeting rooms. But all in all, they tried to do everything, you know, when they built it the second time. And I think they really built a complete center.
You think they tried too much? They bit off too much?
Well, it turned out that they tried too much in terms of how much money they had. I think that's another story.
Now, you suggested that the Federation had withdrawn a bit of its control that they had exercised when earlier.
The control should have been exercised by Federation.
And it wasn't.
It wasn't.
Why was that?
I don't know. I had, it was after my presidency in Federation, I don't know. I mean, the people involved at that time would have to answer that sort of question. Whether they were aware of it or not, I can't imagine if they weren't aware of it. So that another factor came into it, of course, is all the agencies have always talked about, we are autonomous, our board rules itself. And Federation has always allowed, you know, said fine, okay, but that has to go with responsibility too, because Federation is the umbrella organization for the whole community, and all these organizations can't go wild. Anyways, the answer is that it was resolved finally when it was paid off this spring.
Do you have any more insights into the recent crisis?
No. The recent crisis was resolved as a result of the committee that ran it had their meetings Monday nights. And I'm on call Monday night, so I could never attend. So I never really was very much part of that. Other than peripherally, of course, I would talk to Marty Rinn and individuals who were involved, and Barry Hampman and Lenny Robinson, and I was involved in that, but not directly in what happened there. But I think the one that knows most about it is Marty Rinn, because he was the one that rang the bell of alarm.
Well, I plan to get to as many of those
sure
as I can. Before we move away from JCC, do you have any summary statements that you want to say, or any other insights that you might have into the meaning, the role of the Jewish Community Center in this city, the meaning of it, what it's meant to them?
Well, it'd be repetitious, but I do feel as though the Community Center has made a great contribution in terms of unifying the community. Not only unifying the community as far as individuals are concerned, but also enriching the community in terms of what has been accomplished. By the geographical location of it, it has alienated from itself, not from the total community, but from itself certain segments because they can't get to it. The North End is a good example, and that is the sort of thing that I feel now that the, not just the center, and the center is doing its part, but the whole community, by that I mean Federation, has to see that that situation is corrected, because it can lead to a great strengthening of the community, or it can lead to a weakening of the community where a certain segment of the population isn't serviced and is lost as far as being of assistance to the community. I feel strongly that that's the job that has to be done for the next few years.
Let's talk now.
I don't want to make it personal, I see.
That's all right. Let's talk now about your involvement in the Jewish Federation. How long have you served on the Federation, and what have been your major focuses? What have you dealt with?
I was allowed to serve on the Federation and become a member of the board back, I guess, in the late 50s, and remained a member on the board for many, many years, and I think I was chairman of every committee on the in Federation at one time or another. There are a lot of interesting things that happened there that I'm sure you're going to become aware of. But I was, when I was head of the budget committee, I felt that we talked about planning, and we didn't ever get anywhere. We devised various ways of trying to accomplish planning. We broke the organization up into different sections, and now we have done that successfully, but it wasn't particularly successful at that time. But I have always felt as though that unless we do good planning for the community, and long-range planning is a very difficult
Would you explain aspect. Further what you just said about breaking the committee up?
Oh, well, right now, as you know, there are various segments to the planning and budget. One is the group of social group where the Family Society, Jewish Community Center, they belong, and then the national group, the Israeli group, the I don't have them all at the tip of my finger.
I see what you mean.
But that sort of thing, and each we would then be appoint chairman to these various groups. They would interview. Education, of course, is a very strong one. They would interview, say, individuals from the Hebrew Day School, and it was merely an exercise in talking because we didn't have any power, those committees didn't, so that nothing was accomplished. When it finally came to the board, when it finally came to the final allocations for funds, what preceded it didn't have the influence that it should have.
The board made the decision?
No, the planning and budget did, and then the board could change the decision.
I see.
So that
But planning
the
budget
process
didn't rely on the committees that it had.
It did not, no, on their subcommittees. It didn't rely on them. They spoke up for them, and somebody else would say, but we need it more than you do, and it was a free-for-all. One of the first steps that was taken was that the board could not alter the recommendations of the planning and budget. The planning and budget presented to the board, and the board could accept it or reject it. And if they rejected it, it would have to go back to planning and budget. They would have to re-devise it again and resubmit it. And this, of course, gave planning and budget a good deal more strength. The people on the board felt as though they had lost some of their authority. On the other hand, it was being vested in other individuals who were very responsible, and the final say was still with the board.
Are the chairmen of all the committees taken from the board?
They have to have, the Constitution spells out how it's appointed. Some from the board, some from the general community.
Okay.
So subsequent to that, the power was given to the budget committee. Now that made things a whole lot more, a lot simpler when it finally came to passing the budget by the board.
When approximately was that? Just a guess.
Oh, I would say middle 70s. next step was that when I was president, I decided in order to strengthen planning, we had to have two co-chairmen on the planning and budget, one for planning and one for budget. And we had it all set up, and it was really working very, very well until the individual who was to do the budgeting had to be appointed to some other job, and that left only the one again. So I lost the co-chairman. And then I think it was Frankie Loeb, who was at that time head of the planning, she had to take over and being both planning and budget. And I can't recall who the budget was, whether it was Ernie Stiefel or not Ernie Stiefel, but Saul Helfand or somebody of that sort, who had to assume another role. Mm-hmm. But at that time, we decided we had to have a proper planning process. And we hired somebody to come in and do it. And I requested Sam Strom to be chairman of that particular planning thing. And after a great deal of persuasion, he accepted the role. And as a result, of course, was the large volume of recommendations that you're aware of it, are you?
I'm not sure which exactly.
Well, this is back about 4 or 5 years, and it's available. There's still copies of it. From that, there are many, many changes developed in the Federation, in the structure of the Federation. The planning and budget process that we've talked about was really set up properly so that each group had its strength. The chairman of each subgroup then became part of a steering committee. And it was the steering committee that then finally resolved the allocations, and they presented the planning and budget. And as I say, that worked out fine. There was a study done on personnel, and at that time I think we had 1.5, or possibly 2.5 individuals, and it was recommended that we have 4 individuals. Our whole, and the structure was to be changed. But there were many, many recommendations that were implemented during the subsequent year or two after that.
Okay, Strom was the chairman of that
group. The planning and budget, yes.
That put out this recommendation?
Yes.
This study?
Yes. Uh-huh. And
was that a turning point in the whole Federation history?
Yes, because that's made a tremendous difference. See, we now have 4 full-time professionals. At that time, we have 1.5, sometimes 2.5, and be back and forth. And every time you try to get hired, or I remember the struggle we had in trying to get we wanted to get somebody to spend half time on public relations to coordinate our defense agencies. And this was a threat to AJC and a threat to ADL, and what a struggle that was. Finally, that was accomplished, and the 3 agencies now work together hand in glove and are much stronger and are much more effective than they were individually. That was after a real difficult struggle.
Was there a major change when the Jewish Federation was created out of what had been the Federated Fund? Was that a big change or not so much?
Those were names that changed over back and forth all the time. It didn't mean anything. It wasn't until we actually did the complete planning process, or study program process, I should say.
Which was that strong.
Yes. That we actually became a federation and council, I think it was. Prior to that, the name was there all the time. The only thing we've changed is changed from Greater Seattle to Seattle, or things of that sort, but they're insignificant changes.
Well, somebody had suggested to me that 1966, when they became the Jewish Federation, was a turning point of some kind.
Well, at that particular time, we decided this is what we wanted, but it was never implemented to the extent that it should have been. Every effort was made to do it, but it was we didn't ever accomplish it until actually we did the study, and the study set forth what we should be doing, and when that was put into effect, then I think we became much more of a planning group. But we did planning, but it wasn't effective. I shouldn't say it wasn't effective. It wasn't as effective as it should have been and as it is now.
Okay. The last set of questions I have to ask you are kind of funny. I feel kind of strange asking, but I want to know about power in the community. Who are leaders in the Seattle community and why are they leaders? Not necessarily specific individuals, but what makes...
Number one, to be a leader in the community, all you have to do is be prepared to work and put in a lot of time. And I would say that the individuals who, whenever I sit down at an executive board meeting, I take a look around and I say, these are nice people. They are all good people. You don't necessarily agree, but they're all good people and nice people who have worked very, very hard for the community.
So that time and
people who are can work and know how to work and enjoy work. It's the old saying that if you want to get a job done, go to somebody who's busy. Don't go to somebody who isn't busy, and then you can get it done.
So it's also ability.
There was
an ability. These are people.
With ability. And when I say nice people, I mean they're smart, they're bright, they're willing, they don't shirk jobs, they're good people. It's, you know, and it's a pleasure to work with people of that sort. And I think you take a look at the board generally, and you'd say that I'd like to have these people as my friends, because they are individuals that have a community interest and want to see the community grow. So that's, I think, the most. I'm not spelling it out in terms of what they need to do, but just in terms of how I view them.
Yeah. What are some of the underneath motivations, do you think, for this dedication, the duty?
I don't care what the dedication is. You know, oftentimes people are accused of the reason they're doing it is for self-glory, because of ego needs. I don't care what ego needs they have. If they do the job, as far as I'm concerned, the community is better off and everybody else is better off. And I won't listen to talks about ego needs as the motivation. And that is for the people that say that are just individuals that have the same ego needs and aren't doing anything about it. Or I'm being cruel there, but who don't recognize how much effort it is to, you know, because as an officer, oftentimes you'd see your picture and people would tease you about that. Well, right at the very beginning, I was trained that you don't have your picture in because you're in. And I don't say my picture, but I mean an individual who's getting publicity. You don't have it because to satisfy that individual. You do it because it's a means of accomplishing a goal for that particular agency. This is the sort of exercise or publicity that you have to go through. There's only one other factor that I think should be mentioned, and that is for a long time, a real effort was made to have people who were who did have something to offer in terms of special skills to be on the board. Without their looking at their pocketbook, I think there's probably a little more now of looking at the pocketbook for people on the board.
Than there was in the past?
Yes, than there was in the past.
Why?
Because we find that you raise more money that way. I mean, if you want to raise more money, you have to take that into consideration. So that it has its positive, definitely positive its aspects, but some of these same individuals maybe have a different point of view than a social worker who doesn't have very much money, who again also has certain skills. And that's the dichotomy, I'd say, that I'm trying to indicate. That there was a tendency was to have the social worker before, now the tendency is to see that individual can make a contribution in terms of raising funds. And the amount of funds that have been raised has increased quite markedly. so that it, and you can do more, and the social workers are better off because you can do more. So that it's a tough choice to make when you're thinking about when you're on a nominating this, the you say where is the strength? Strength in any of it is who controls the nominating committee, if you really want to get right down to it. Because they're the ones who determine who's going to continue being having the power on the board. And I think enough said about that. I don't know that I can spell it out any more clearly than that. Those are the two impressions.
Right, there's one obvious motivation, and I don't know if we should talk about it or not. That's the Jewish motivation. I mean, there's been so much written about Jewish charity. Do you think that that plays?
I have any doubt that that's underlying, and I take that as a sine qua non, and it's, I don't think it needs any discussion. I think everybody has that, or you can't. If you don't have that motivation, you're not going to be involved.
Okay, then that brings me to another question, and that is, why was the Seattle Jewish community before, say, the mid-60s, why was it known around the country as not being a giving community? What was it about it? Is there any way you have an answer?
It was a divided community. The community was divided. And certain segments of the community, it was per capita that it was judged by. And there were certain segments of the community, and that is essentially the Sephardic community, that didn't feel part of the total community, and they weren't particular givers in the community. The Orthodox were very anxious to support their own institutions, their Hebrew day school, their synagogues, etc. So that they were not, there were some that were, but just generally, they reduced the per capita giving. It left essentially to the conservative group and a large number of the Reform. But there were a few in the Reform who were not strong for Israel, so that that segment would reduce the per capita giving. And all those things have changed. The community now is so much more of a single community than it was then. And responsibility for giving has included most of these groups now, and more of them. There's still plenty that, still lots of fertile fields that have to be tapped. I'll come back to the North End again. These are individuals who, many of them, who are part of the university, and again, don't feel part of the community. And they have to be included in the community. So that I think Those are the major factors as I see them that reduced our giving. But we had some very generous givers all along throughout those times. The level of giving has increased because the affluence of the Jewish community has changed too. We have individuals who are very much more wealthy than what we ever had in the 50s. So that it's new wealth. There's a lot of new wealth in the community which didn't exist then. Does that answer your question?
Yes, that answers my question. And I don't have any more specific questions. I thank you very much.
It's a pleasure. I hinted at this before when I talked about the struggle we had among the defense agencies. We in the community have had a branch of ADL and a branch of AJC. For a long, long time.
Since the late 40s.
Yes. And in addition to that, whenever a problem arose, say via the Israel, it was the Federation that was called. And this is the situation. This is the interpretation we give on it. We would like to know what your group thinks about it. So the Federation oftentimes was asked as the spokesman, both from by the newspapers and by national groups, as to what attitudes they should take. It was the relationship between ADL, AJC, and Federation was not close. It was not antagonistic. It varied, actually, from because each time there was a different executive director with each one of the groups as compared to who was in the Federation. There were some times when there was some cooperation, but there was no organized way of being able to handle this as a community, so that we couldn't say the community says feels this way, or the majority of the community feels this way about something. And always we would hear, well, they can't speak for me, I'm not, I don't feel that way at all about it. So that, I don't know when this was, but I think it was in the...
I think 1966, the Community Relations Council was formed.
Is it that long far back? I didn't 66. Realize it. But about that time, it was recommended that we have a Jewish Community Relations Council. We very quickly recognized that in order to do that, it required somebody's time, a professional's time, just to even call the meetings. The two individuals at that time who were with the other two defense agencies didn't get along too well. So they were threatened by this. Was Federation going to take over their job? And they objected to it violently. When I say violently, meetings until 12:30, 1 o'clock at night. we'd come home, we'd be wrung out. But eventually...
Now, this was Cy Kaplan?
Not Cy Kaplan,
he
no.
Not,
yes, he was there. And when I referred to them not getting on too well, he'd be one of the parties. But this was at Federation level. This was
Federation.
The chairman. Yes, these are lay people.
Okay.
Merle Cohn. Myself.
Okay. Was
and
Al
at
Franco,
that time
Al
I was,
Franco involved?
Mm, and Al Franco. See, Al Franco at that time, I think he had just become active in AJC, and I had been active in AJC.
He had been in ADL for a long time.
And he had been in ADL. Well, all of us were in ADL. I don't know whether you're aware of the fact, but ADL board consists of everybody in the Jewish community, practically. It's a very large board. I think there were 100 people on the board. So, you know, Osai would call and say, would you be on the board? Yes, and once a year you met, and that was the extent of the board. Whereas AJC was a very small group.
Okay, so the fighting
group.
Was not the professionals, but the...
That's right, the fighting was, the professionals fought, but they didn't engage in these battles. These battles were conducted by lay people as to what was best for the community. ADL did actually feel real threatened that, there was a question as to whether the person who was working at AJC would become a part-time employee for Federation, and his salary would be paid half by Federation and half by AJC. However, as a result of all these struggles, eventually the Community Relations Council was started. I think Al was the first chairman.
Yes, he talked
I was
about
the second
that.
One, yeah.
Al talked about his part in that on his table.
That's right. And he became the first chairman of the CRC, and as I recall, I followed him. But as a result of that, all of them learned to talk together. And when there's an emergency comes through now, they're called by any one of the three will say, let's get together at 7:30 in the morning. And I haven't ever attended those meetings because they're too early in the morning for me. But they would start early in the morning. By 8:30, 9 o'clock, they were all back in their own offices and with an opinion as to how they should handle it here locally, which was much wiser and much more comfortable for everyone to live with than we ever had before. All three organizations, I think, have benefited by that. But the CRC in the Federation itself has become has made a real contribution. We're never quite satisfied that our public relations are sufficient or are good enough. But they are so much superior to what we ever had before in terms of our relationship with newspapers, with the Catholic community, with all the other segments of the community. Getting our story over now is done so much more skillfully and so much more professionally than we ever were able to do it before. And mind you, they used to work hard. It wasn't a lack of hard of work, but it wasn't coordinated sufficiently so that they couldn't speak with as loud a voice as they're able to speak now. Hmm. That's sufficient.